Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our rain-challenged workshop on the traditions. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet, AA Tradition, How It Developed, by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. A couple announcements. Jim Finley is a clinical psychologist and also a spiritual director. He works out of Santa Monica and does workshops and retreats around the country. He's doing a retreat December 12th to the 14th, so that's a couple of weeks from now, Friday through Sunday, at the Mary and Joseph Retreat Center in Palos Verdes. Interesting title: Mystical Sobriety, Exploring the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous for Us All. So he's a person who was in a monastery at the same time I was, for about the same length of time. And he happened to be in the monastery in Gethsemane, a Trappist monastery, where Thomas Merton was. And Thomas Merton was his spiritual director for 6 years. I didn't have that experience. So if you're interested at all, there are flyers on the table. You wouldn't have to stay overnight. You could commute. I doubt whether you could actually get a room if you wanted to stay overnight at this point. But you can check it out if you're interested. Also, Dr. Alan Berger, who I co-facilitate workshops with, especially on emotional sobriety, he's a clinical psychologist who is creating a conference in the South Bay called the Evolution of Addiction Treatment Conference. Well, it's at the Westin at the airport. This is the second or third year for the conference. And there's a flyer for that there also. Although it's geared primarily to professionals, it may have some interest to people, certainly in recovery at the level that you're in interest in. And then there's the cruise. I think I've mentioned that. That's October of next year. There's a flyer about that. But more relevantly, there's the workshop that begins in January, and we have lots of flyers there. Take as many as you think you can use for your respective meetings or wherever, friends, etc. Once again, respect the culture of the meeting with regard to non-AA announcements and flyers. Well, we're here to discuss tonight the 11th tradition, and of course, it's about anonymity, but so is the 12th tradition. So I'll spend a little time talking about the difference between the 11th and the 12th tradition. We have two traditions on anonymity. Why do we have them? Maybe in your reading you kind of figured out the contrast. The short form of the 11th tradition, our public relations policy, is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. I put in TV too, that may be old language. Long form, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it is better to let our friends recommend us. So just some thoughts, and if you've been in the STEP workshop, you've had some exposure to the word anonymous. Anybody want to speculate on what anonymous means in terms of its word derivatives? Please, George. It does. It means without name. It comes from the Greek word onyma, O-N-Y-M-A, which means name. And when you put an A-N in front of it, it means no name. So anonymous literally means that there's no distinguishing characteristic. I believe I've used the metaphor of the grains of sand on the beach to describe humility. That is coming from the Latin word humus, which means earth, meaning dirt, meaning common, no unique characteristics. And, of course, here in Santa Monica, we have a large beach with grains of sand, billions of grains of sand, all pretty much the same. Very little individual characteristic differences, none that would be worth remarking about. And that's the sense of anonymity. That's the sense of humility. Blending in, no uniqueness, no outstanding characteristics. And in the case of the 11th and 12th traditions, now we're going to focus on the 11th, no individual name. And I believe the difference between the 11th tradition and the 12th tradition is that the 11th refers to no particular name of the person in connection with the corporation, the name, the group, Alcoholics Anonymous. No face represents, no person represents Alcoholics Anonymous from that standpoint. The level of anonymity is at the public level. Lots of confusion about that. Maybe some ignorance behind that confusion. All right, it's at the public level, defined as radio, press, television, and TV. No personal recognition of face or name. All right. In contrast to tradition 12, which I believe is the spiritual principle of anonymity and humility for the individual in their own spiritual life, not necessarily as a relationship to the corporate body of Alcoholics Anonymous, but in relationship to their own spiritual life and their relationship to the community at large. Tradition 11 is about public relations, and Tradition 12 is about personal relations. No individual's connection or no individual's prominence. 11th tradition, connection. 12th tradition, prominence. Bill spends quite a bit of time throughout the literature talking about the price that's paid, and that's the denial of self-seeking. He makes a similar reference in the STEP work in his own autobiography in the first chapter of the Big Book. He says, simple but not easy. a price has to be paid. It means the destruction of self-centeredness. We must turn in all things to the Father of Light, who presides over all. Something like that. I was also struck by his comments here, which he has made in other traditions, where the good may be the enemy of the best. It might seem like a good idea for a public person who gets sober through AA to then proselytize in the name of AA about his good luck of getting sober. And that certainly might bring in some people. But the problem with that is that if that person then gets drunk or relapses, or perhaps even worse, has an incident of life that challenges his moral character, all right, then there'd be sort of an identification of a person with the organization. And Tradition 11 is really meant to try to once again reinforce what we learned right from the beginning is the nature of the traditions and the purpose of the traditions, which is unity. We have this corporate body, Alcoholics Anonymous, composed of all the individuals and all the groups and all the states and all the countries. We have this corporate body, and underneath this, as Bill uses the metaphor, or at least the poetic reference in the big book, this the spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. The spirit of the universe, that life force which animates this corporate body. And that's the unifying force field for Alcoholics Anonymous, this spirit of the universe. He calls the purpose of AA, of course, is to provide a message. It's not to provide meetings. It's not to provide traditions. It's not to reinforce the step process at all. The total purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is to carry the message that you can recover, all right, through the steps, through a relationship with God, through fellowship, through service, that triangle that is supported by the 12 principles of the steps, the 12 principles of the traditions, and the 12 principles of the concepts, that triangle that, from my personal imagery, represents all three parts of the human being. We treat our mind through transformation of the steps, and we treat our body literally through the mechanics of going to meetings and detoxing in meetings and staying detoxed in fellowship, but we detox our spirit through the concepts of service, through the service that we carry to one another. As Bill says on that same page that I quoted earlier about simple but not easy, at the bottom he says we perfect and enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. The word sacrifice permeates the step work. We sacrifice alcohol, the first half of the first step, and we sacrifice our self-centeredness in the second half of the second step. And the balance of the steps are the implementation of that sacrifice, the turning from self-centeredness to other-centeredness. And it's the same theme with the traditions, where we're sacrificing our connection, our individual connection, in terms of the prominence of that, or the revelation of that in the public arena. And we're also sacrificing power and prestige in terms of living the 12 principles of the traditions in a sense of the spirituality and the humility that goes with that. He calls AA has a lifeline, and that is to carry the message. And we keep that lifeline clear by not getting it mixed into individual prominence or the corruption of motives through power and prestige. I've mentioned the steps are for the sacrifice of the addiction and of the self-centeredness, but also you can't keep it unless you give it away, which is one of those spiritual paradoxes, a conundrum that doesn't make any sense in the world of logic. We sacrifice our time and our energy and our money. The traditions ask us to sacrifice our prestige and our power and our individual recognition, that sense of anonymity, that sense of humility. All for the singleness of purpose of the unity, so that we're not, there's no one-upsmanship in Alcoholics Anonymous, at least theoretically, right? Right. I mean, this we have standards that are ideals, vision statements. And Ernie Kurtz says it the best in the title of that second book that he published, right? The Spirituality of Imperfection. It's perfect for us, the spirituality of imperfection. We're perfectly imperfect. He has another wonderful poetic phrase. He calls the traditions 11 and 12 the protective mantle, spiritual invisibility. And I couldn't help but then think about the Harry Potter movie where the young boy is taking this cloth and he puts it over himself to become invisible and can walk around. All right, this is the invisible mantle. Traditions 11 and 12 that makes us invisible. I mean, this is the goal. Makes us literally invisible to one another in terms of any type of status or any type of special characteristics. A protective mantle, spiritual invisibility. Talks about individuals using self-restraint. So that we can make the solution really visible, because it's about the message, not about the personality. But we do have lots of committees and organizational structures that support the communication of the message, not just through 12-step work, but in the sense of carrying the message from in terms of sponsorship. But in terms of health, H&I, hospitals and institutions, and that permeates the entire organization of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a committee that basically suggests guidelines for how to bring material and the message into prisons and hospitals and treatment centers where people can't come out to meetings and get the message, so we bring the message into them. There's also a whole cadre of people that talk about literature delivered to, prepared for and delivered to professional people like doctors and nurses and psychiatrists and psychologists and even insurance companies and even in schools and even to government agencies and to the courts and the police systems. And if you have any interest in getting involved in any of that, there's mechanisms for that so that people know. And I'm a great believer in that. I had personal angst over these two traditions when I was developing my workshops, and lots of people encouraged me to set up a website. Well, I'm kind of a retard when it comes to technology, so I had a lot of prejudice about, no, I can't do that because it's against the traditions. And but as I looked at the traditions and as I talked to people who were much more familiar with them than I am and much more familiar with technology, and I took it into prayer and sponsor conversation, It was very clear to me that a website was necessary in order for people to find resources that they wouldn't be able to find otherwise. And here's how that works. And this was what given to me in meditation. If somebody doesn't know about a resource, it's not an alternative. But if somebody knows about the resource, then they can say yes or no. if they don't know they have an alternative, they don't have it. But if they know they have an alternative or a resource, they can use it or not. And that's really, I think, the spirit of the message in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not about promotion. We don't market the message. But we do provide information. Information versus promotion. We prepare brochures and we send them to the hospitals and to the police courts and to the government agencies and wherever else we feel that churches, for instance, might be a wonderful place for people to get involved in terms of bringing the message if you're involved with one of the faith traditions. Meet with the pastor, the rabbi, or the minister and talk to him, her, about your own recovery and whether or not it might be helpful to have some literature or perhaps at least for you to be a resource. I'm a resource in my own parish, all right? And just because I want to be helpful. Now, the pastor has no idea about what anonymity is. And so, I mean, we have a group of 30 men in a like this. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, Herb, why don't you tell them about your alcoholism?" And all, and it's kind of like, "Oi, I mean, all right, let's go for it, you know." So it was all right, though. It was all right. No harm, no foul. There were no reporters there, right, which is the issue here in Tradition 11. All right. So those are my opening comments anyway. Any comments, concerns, questions about what we've talked about now? We're going to dive into the material now. Okay, so let's take a look at the language of the heart. And that would be Tradition 11 on page 91. Grapevine article, October 1948. Anybody have any highlights on that page 91 that they would like to comment on? And the mic in front is live. If you'd like to use it, I encourage it. Please.
My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
And on 91, so the 11th tradition stands sentinel over the lifelines, announcing that there is no need for self-praise, that it is better to let our friends recommend us, and that our whole public relations policy, contrary to usual customs, should be based upon the principle of attraction rather than promotions. Shot-in-the-arm methods are not for us.
Isn't that think about the word that Michael just read from here, page 91. The 11th tradition stands sentinel over the lifelines. I mean, you can see the guard there marching back and forth in this illustrious uniform, sentinel, all right? This is the tradition that guards that. I love the line, almost tongue-in-cheek, that ends the first paragraph. Our reputation is already so much better than our actual character. Well, yeah, hello, you've been to meetings too. Yeah, all right. Anybody else have any highlights on that? Good public relations are lifelines. One serious public relations calamity could always turn thousands away from us to perish a matter of life and death indeed. Just turn it down.
Katie, alcoholic, and at, or whatever, you know. Sorry. Like most societies, we are sometimes scandalous, but never yet in public. That cracks me up.
Yeah.
My last drunk was public, you know. And I mean, it's just an interesting thing that here we are made, sometimes some of us, namely me, made a big noise about being an alcoholic when we're drunk. But then now this is a real practice for us to go, yeah. Okay. I'm being a good girl. Here I am sober for so many years, but I can't go out and get it in the paper.
Not in the paper, but you can go out any place that there isn't a reporter and talk about it. So don't be shy about that. It talks about preserve a friendly and vital relation to all the world about us, especially if you're relying heavily on right principles, a wise vigilance, and a deepest personal responsibility on the part of every one of us. I mean, there's an amazing amount of wonderful wisdom in this. Please.
Hi, Greg. Three different 12-step programs. So the first paragraph, it says, second sentence, hardly a syllable of criticism or ridicule has ever been spoken of AA. I looked at the date, in 1948, it was 13 years after AA was, and I don't know, maybe, I don't know, I just, 13-stepping, the whole accusations about cults, and I don't know, I think maybe I don't know if that's just my perspective of Alcoholics Anonymous in 13 years being sober in AA, but I don't know. I don't know what public opinion is of AA now, but I don't think it's as I wouldn't call it hardly a symbol of criticism or ridicule has ever been spoken of AA. I think that's changed since this has been written.
We've had lots of time to acquire some criticism.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, more recently, I guess, there's a program, I haven't seen it, 48 Hours, that talked about a woman's death and a man who was just sentenced to prison. And the whole issue is about 13-stepping, and they're going to sue Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, good luck with that one. But anyway, we'll see what happens. It'll be very interesting. But I suggest that the general population, especially the professional population, has a very high regard for Alcoholics Anonymous. I've just recently, the last 5 years, been in the professional community of psychologists, psychiatrists, and treatment professionals, and it's a huge world. You can't even imagine how big it is. Quite frankly, I couldn't. And the respect for the 12-step program is right at the top. There's a few people that are leveraging, from a marketing standpoint, a contrary opinion. There's a Malibu Treatment Center that goes on television that tells everybody they're not 12-step. And they are loaded with people coming in because there's a lot of people that don't want to do 12-step. Well, my God, if I didn't have to, I wouldn't either. Exactly. Please.
Just an alcoholic. In the last paragraph, Michael stopped short of this. It says, shot in the arm methods are not for us. No press agents, no promotional devices, no big names. The hazards are too great.
Yeah.
Immediate results will always be elusive because the easy shortcut to notoriety can generate permanent and smothering liabilities.
Smothering liabilities.
Yeah. And I just, over the years I've been sober, I've seen, people, actors and actresses say, oh, I'm in AA. And the next thing you know, they're getting arrested for drunk driving.
Right.
And the thing about the 48 hours is I watched it. And the one thing they didn't make clear is that both people were drinking.
And drugging, hello.
And drugging, and they were slipping, and they were blaming AA for that.
So, of course,
You can't win, you can't lose.
Yeah. But it's her sister, and she's a victim, and she doesn't understand. And, I don't want to prejudge it, but there's going to be a lot of judging going on. Yeah. Page 92. Anybody have any comments on page? Well, and that's the concept that you talked about, Justin, was where Bill said the immediate good may be the enemy of the long-term best. I mean, that's a terrific wisdom saying. And we're all about immediate gratification. But that doesn't work so well for the human condition, let alone the addict. What do they call it? Short-term gratification, long-term planning, and short-term denial works much better than immediate gratification. In fact, there was a study done, statistically significant study, by psychologists that were dealing with second graders, long-term study, and they said to these second graders, we're going to give you candy. And if you eat the candy, you will have had the candy. But if you don't eat the candy and you hold it for 30 minutes, you'll get two candies. They ran the study. 30 years later, they followed up on the people who ate the first candy and not waited for the second candy. And the people who waited for the second candy all did much better in life than the people who ate the first candy. It was very indicative. Delayed gratification is a character signature that will serve you very well. And well, we all know. We all know.
Hey, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
John.
So the through line for me was on page 91, first paragraph, from all over the world, not comes from, but keen sympathy and downright admiration. And then the warning of the future poses no great problem or challenge to AA than how to best preserve a friendly and vital relation to all the world about us.
Yeah.
And the final solution or summary, which is, so it is becoming our code that there are things that no AA ever does, lest he divert AA from its sole purpose and injure our public relations, and thereby the chances of those sick ones yet to come.
Yeah. Yep. Nicole? It's nice to have the real Nicole. We've had lots of stand-ins.
I heard that and wanted to thank everybody for keeping me here in spirit. I really appreciate that. Nicole, Al-Anon. So Al-Anon has this handy little checklist called a checklist for evaluating our maturity. And one of them says that a mature adult does not... Wait, where is it? I just lost it.
Does not lose loss maturity.
Can actually handle delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. Somewhere it says that, but... just in general, this checklist for me has been a really good way to live the steps and the traditions, and I've applied it a lot to my life. I have all of it. There's like 12 or 15 of them, so I don't want to read all of them. But the delayed gratification one is the biggest for me because I don't know what that means in without it, like without hearing that from others. It's that feel good junkie thing.
Yep.
So I just really appreciate that you brought that up because I'm reminded of that pretty much daily. But
well, and that's one of the purposes of the 11th tradition for sure. He says here on page 92, we're becoming aware that no member ought to describe himself in full view of the general public as an AA, meaning a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, even for the most worthy purpose, lest a perilous precedent be set which would tempt others to do so for a purpose is not so worthy. It's a very strict interpretation, and we'll be talking about that throughout the whole workshop tonight. Let's go to the 12 and 12, tradition 11 on page 180. Are there any highlights or comments on 180 or 181? We'll cover both pages. Any highlights that anybody would like to comment on? Well, he makes the point of attraction rather than promotion in that first paragraph. He talks about pieces that are in the newspaper, the radio, moving picture, and television, through which people have found information and a message about a possible solution to the problem that they're having. And it might be drugs, and it might be alcohol, and it might be food, and it might be gambling. There's a huge system in California supporting recovery from gambling addiction at UCLA. And if you're not aware of it, you really need to be. It's a prototype for the entire country. And the state of California has literally funded it in millions of dollars in terms of a program of recovery for gambling, and they're quite supportive of the 12-step community and sending in their philosophy is we need to stabilize them physically and psychologically through therapy and intensive inpatient or outpatient programs, but the whole purpose of it is to embed them in the 12-step community so that they have then some type of a continuity and a resource and support system outside. Does that sound familiar? I mean, I'm talking about gambling. And that, now, of course, that's exactly, from my standpoint, the best treatment model for alcohol and drug addiction, where if people need that kind of professional intervention, that it is then supported by a commitment to and an experience with some type of 12-step community.
Richard, alcoholic.
Hey, Richard.
By temperament, nearly every one of us had been an irrepressible promoter, and the prospect of a society composed almost entirely of promoters was frightening.
Yeah.
I could just see that. I mean, AA cars, you know, just
yeah,
everything.
Right.
Although I've seen a lot of books like, you know, emotional sobriety. I mean, sobriety, sobriety, sobriety. It's obvious they're an AA, but they don't say it on the cover. You know?
Well, it's there's a psychologist in New York who's done a lot of work in publishing in emotional sobriety, and I don't believe that she's in AA, but she's very aware of the implications of the kind of harmony and stability that comes from certainly restraint from alcohol and drugs, but then she translates it into the emotional sobriety that comes from being aware and awake and mindful and transformed. I mentioned at the beginning, the Jim Finley will be doing a retreat on mystical sobriety. I went to a one-day workshop that he had done, and he's really got a handle on the steps. I mean, he's got an entire background in mystical theology and the whole history of mysticism, but he's really impressed with the transformative nature of the methodology of the 12 steps. So he's paid attention to it. You may or may not know that he wrote the foreword to my book. And he really sees it as a huge connection to authentic and deep spiritual life. How about page 81? Let's see. Well, once again, he's talking about not having any one person or image connected to the organization or the message. That's the clearest way I could say it about the 11th tradition, and the simplest is that it's about keeping the message clean and whole, not having it connected to any personality or person. Let's go to page 182 and 183. Any highlights or comments on that?
Hi, George Brown, alcoholic.
George.
Yeah, I was really struck by the last couple of sentences. This tradition is a constant and personal and practical reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA.
Yeah.
You know, which interacts with the humility that we develop. And the last sentence in particular, in it each member becomes an active guardian of our fellowship.
Well, and that's where that person, personal responsibility.
I wish it were more true.
Say it again.
I wish that were more true.
Well, you know, it's an ideal. Here we are, you know, really dedicated people who have survived the gauntlet of 11 weeks of the traditions workshop and come out on a rainy night. All right. Oh, really? Think about it. In L.A., you know, nobody goes out in the rain in L.A. Right. So you guys are the brave spirits, right? All right. All right. So, yes.
Just one more. I just thought it was really neat. I thought it was neat, Katie, alcoholic, Al-Anon. It was really neat about how the press was impressed with the foundation's anonymity.
Yeah.
That it was so opposite to the culture.
It was then, even more so today. Yeah. Good Lord!
Yes, that's what I mean. So opposite the culture that it was an attraction to the and also the fact that their cooperation. But in page 182, they talk about talking self-promoting AAs out, or they stopped putting their name in it. I mean, the press themselves did that. So I didn't quite know that.
The press was very impressed with the fact that no individual wanted to get their face and their name in the paper. I mean, that's like, what? You know, it's like totally contrary to their experience. And that in itself spoke well of the integrity of the organization.
And that the foundation wrote most of the news organizations. The foundation wrote most of the
press and told them not to do it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The point is the General Service Office today circulates to newspapers and et cetera and has guidelines for conventions with regard to the reporting, the pictures, the names, and everybody's been very educated with regard to that.
Nicole Al-Anon. By the way, Herb, I love your color choices for the evening.
Me too.
Okay. Thanksgiving, you know, whatever. I'm colorblind, so it doesn't make any difference.
Oh, we match. That's why I said that.
Nice pink hair. No.
I have a question, because... So, and this kind of goes back to the actors and the Anonymous People movie that came out, and how is that not, how is that the anonymity, you know?
What's your question?
That's the question. So there's a show or a comedy show every year called Yuckaholics, and it's alcoholics doing comedy. It's primarily promoted within Alcoholics Anonymous, but other people outside of fellowship know about it.
So what?
So
what's the guideline for the 11th tradition?
No.
Wait.
Press, radio, films, and TV.
Thank you.
But was Anonymous People not a film?
The what?
Anonymous People, the movie that just came out, Anonymous People.
Did anybody in there say they were a member of Alcoholics Anonymous?
You know what? I guess not.
No.
Thank you.
It's a good movie for that very reason. They really honored the traditions. If you haven't seen it, it's worthwhile. It's a documentary called The Anonymous One. And it just says, because there's a psychological kind of orientation that we shouldn't say, I'm Herb, I'm an alcoholic, I'm Herb, I'm a drug addict, I'm Herb, I'm a food addict, or whatever the nomenclature is in your respective fellowship. They say, because it's a negative, it's a diminutive, it's constantly reinforcing that you're diseased and broken. Yeah. Well, that's really the point, but be that as it may, they're saying it's not good for you psychologically. So why don't you just say, you're a person who had a problem with addiction and you're in recovery. Or there was much tighter jargon there. I had it down when I first saw the movie. But it was actually quite refreshing. It was quite, okay, that would work. I'm Herb. I have recovered from a problem with alcohol. I mean, a little more cumbersome, but it would still be quite legitimate to say that. But what your point, Nicole, where'd you go? Oh, there you are, is that they're not doing this at the public level. The movie never once, I don't believe, mentioned that anybody was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, if you are, we recommend this verbiage. It was just giving a kind of a current positive psychology slant to how you identify yourself, which I thought was perfectly legitimate. I haven't adopted it. I tried it a couple times personally, and it was just a little too cumbersome. I'm probably embedded in my vocabulary. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have any problem with that. It's kind of like, up until I became an alcoholic, I was a seeker. After I became an alcoholic, I was a finder. So for me, it's a quite positive thing. Yeah. Please, John. Help me.
I don't see his face.
Oh, yeah, I see.
And that is not real people.
It's not what? Oh, not real people. Yeah. Oh, I'm confident that's true. Okay. Of course, because it's in print. Yes, of course that would be true. So John's point of view is the language of the heart. You don't, on the cover, show it to me again. It's actually Bill Wilson, I think, with his back to you, so you don't know who it is because there's no facial picture. And the illustrated it's a cartoon, no real people. So that would actually be absolutely in the spirit of and the literal interpretation of the traditions, where there's no face and no full name. Now, when I was publishing my second book, first book actually, I made contact with a General Service Office in New York and had some nice conversations with them about how do I go about publishing a book? Should I call it a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and no name? And they said, no, don't do that. Use your first name and your last initial. All right? I mean, that was direction from them. We don't care what you do. Don't use your last name. That would be incorrect. But go ahead and use your first name and your last initial. I said, okay. And with my website, now that I've done this work, I'm going to have to go through it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that, in fact, on the web itself and in some of the documents, it doesn't refer to me as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's okay to refer to Alcoholics Anonymous, but not me as a member of it. So I'm going to have to be a little more careful with that.
Even if you don't use your full name?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, well, that's a really good point. But my full name's all over the website, so yeah. And I have no trouble with that as long as I'm not saying I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have not put my picture on my website for one of those reasons, though.
What about a therapist or somebody like that that says, yeah, I'm a recovering alcoholic?
He hasn't said, in your words just now, he hasn't said he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said he's a recovered alcoholic, yeah? So what? I know some recovered alcoholics who have never gone to AA. Yeah, absolutely. They have several ticks, though, you know. Joking. Our 11th tradition, illustrated. Anybody have any highlights on the page that has the words on it, in contrast to the cartoons?
And this is the way they treat mafia people.
Oh, yeah. They have the camera angles at the bottom there in a little illustration as to how to be anonymous on television. As I understand it, the 48 Hours did that in terms of their interviews. And so it's about not imaging somebody or giving their full name. It says, many of us have chosen to tell our friends, our neighbors, our employers, our coworkers, our doctors, spiritual advisors that we are in AA. We are not breaking our anonymity in the meaning of this tradition. That's a personal choice. We're going to talk a lot about that next week when we talk about the personal relationship to anonymity in the fellowship and what that might mean. And whether you should call yourself by your first name and last initial, or your full name. And there is a controversy in Alcoholics Anonymous. There are two different camps. Guess what the camps are? New York and Ohio. Right. And they both have a totally different interpretation. Bill Wilson's camp versus Dr. Bob's camp. And we'll talk about that next time. Now, it's not a strong deal, but it's definitely a cultural thing. Okay. So let's go then to... I'd like to go to some of the brochures.
There's one thing I want to
go, please, George.
It says giving the general public an accurate picture of AA is the chief job of our public information committees.
Yeah,
these are committees within the general service structure, so people who are general service representatives are able to serve in these committees. And what they do, for one thing, is they place public service announcements. There are little spots that Alcoholics Anonymous has produced, both video and audio, that get played as public service announcements, and people have the opportunity, preferably people who have some experience in the industry, to contact radio stations and TV stations to get these things played, often at 2 a.m. when you're there, you know, as well as going out to other people in the public who might be in a position to carry the message of AA to alcoholics in their profession. So,
So, John? Good?
I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
So I'm referring to understanding anonymity, which was handed out last week.
There's more of these if you need more for any reason.
And on the copy that I have on page 6, there's a section, anonymity at the public level. And on page 7, in the second paragraph, it reads, it did not take long. This is sort of related to a conversation we were having earlier, but I think it's put very well. It did not take long for those at AA headquarters, so not a person or whatever, but an office, to realize that overzealous and self-serving anonymity breakers could jeopardize the fellowship's hard won, and that's referred to in all this stuff about how hard it was to get the reputation. And they saw that if one person was made an exception, other exceptions would inevitably follow. To assure the unity, effectiveness, and welfare of AA, anonymity had to be universal. And again, the sentinel, it was the guardian of all that AA stood for.
This is a terrific pamphlet, and it crosses over both tradition 11 and 12. If you haven't read it, I really recommend that you do read it, especially in anticipation of next week's discussion. But it will confirm this week's discussion as well as prepare you for next week's discussion. On page 5, it says, the greatest single protection the fellowship has to assure its continued existence and growth. That's why we talked about the sentinel. He says, at the personal level, anonymity provides protection for all members from identification as alcoholics, which is a safeguard often special importance to newcomers because of the stigma. There's still a stigma. Not as much as there was, of course, in 1935. Then he says, at the public level, press, radio, TV, films, and other media technologies, such as the internet, anonymity stresses the equality in the fellowship of all members, putting the brake on those who might otherwise exploit their AA affiliation to achieve recognition, power, or personal gain. When using digital media, AA members are responsible for their own anonymity and that of others. When we post, text, or blog, we should assume that we are publishing at the public level. Up until this weekend, I did not know this information. This was developed in 2010. It's very recent. And it's in this brochure, and I'm sure there's more information here. I'll talk about it in a minute. Well, I'm going to talk about it right now, because this brochure has just the beginnings of the development of that information. Publicly accessible aspects of the internet, such as websites featuring text, graphics, audio, and video, this is page 9, can be considered the same as publishing or broadcasting. That's huge. Unless password protected, a website requires the same safeguards that we use at the level of press, radio, film, and TV, I'm assuming. Simply put, this means that AAs do not identify themselves as AA members using their full names and or full face photos. There's more on the next page 10. When we use digital media, we are responsible for our own anonymity and that of others. When we post, text, or blog, we should assume that we are publishing at the public level. When we break our anonymity in these forums, we may inadvertently break the anonymity of others. And then they give you a reference for some guidelines there that I'm going to be doing some research on to give myself a deeper understanding of the implications of all this. Of course, they have a summary then on page 11, which I'm not going to go through. There's bullet points there that you can look at yourself. I really recommend you do, because that will give you the absolute Reader's Digest version of what we're talking about here. At the same time, this brochure, I have the old one. Anybody have the new one? It's a blue. Show it to us, Rob. That's the new one. I just have the old one from studies from the past. But in my copy, and I think the page numbers are the same, on page 40, in most places, but not all, it's customary for AAs to use their own names when speaking before public or semi-public gatherings. This is done to impress audiences that we no longer fear the stigma of alcoholism. Now, that's because there's no reporters available, right? If, however, newspaper reporters are present, they are earnestly requested not to use the names of any of the alcoholic speakers on the program. This preserves the principle of anonymity so far as the general public is concerned, and at the same time represents us as a group of alcoholics who no longer fear to let our friends know that we have been very sick people. The question of how far each individual or group shall go in dropping anonymity is left strictly to the individual or group concerned. The exception: all groups or individuals, when writing or speaking for publication as AA members of Alcoholics Anonymous, feel bound never to disclose their true names. We ought not to disclose ourselves to the general public through the media of the press, pictures, or on the radio. All right, so it's pretty clear information here. And then going back to page 49, again, a good summary. This is why we see anonymity at the general public level as our chief protection against ourselves, the guardian of all our traditions, and the greatest symbol of self-sacrifice that we know. We now realize that 100% personal anonymity before the public, I'm emphasizing and re-emphasizing this so that people really get what this tradition is about. It's at the public level. Is just as vital to the life of AA as 100% sobriety is to the life of each and every member. I'm going to read it again. It's a powerful contrast between the traditions and the steps, between the group of AA as an organization and the individual AA member. We now fully realize that 100% personal anonymity before the public is just as vital to the life of AA, the organization, as 100% sobriety is to the life of each and every member. That really is a powerful summary of what we're talking about here in Tradition 11. So let's take a look then at the assignments.
Herb?
Yes, please.
Since you referenced this pamphlet, can I speak about some couple of other things in here that I thought were fascinating? I mean,
great.
There's a lot of history in here,
wonderful history, and so, some of the anonymity stuff refers to Tradition 12, so I didn't spend a lot of time on it.
Well, I'll defer that if you want. But
go ahead.
Tradition 12. Well, the first thing just is I had not heard this before. I read this pamphlet that the fellowship got its name almost by chance, that the book was going to be called The Way Out.
Yep.
Until they found out there were a lot of other books named
13.
The Way Out.
There were 12 other books in the Library of Congress, and Bill said, I do not want to be the 13th book.
But the other part that I hope everyone looks at is on the last page, it's page 50 in this pamphlet, where Bill writes about Dr. Bob's resting place is just moving. I mean, it almost made me cry, it made him cry, I guess. But if I can read a little bit there.
Would you?
For a long time now, both Dr. Bob and I have done everything possible to maintain the tradition of anonymity. Just before he died, some of Dr. Bob's friends suggested that there should be a suitable monument or mausoleum erected in honor of him and his wife, Anne. Something befitting a founder. Dr. Bob declined with thanks. Telling me about this a little later, he grinned and said, "For heaven's sake, Bill, why don't you and I get buried like other folks?" Last summer, I visited the Akron Cemetery where Bob and Ann lie. Their simple stone says, "Never a word about Alcoholics Anonymous." This made me so glad I cried. And then at the very end, it says, "We don't have to go to Akron, Ohio to see Dr. Bob's memorial. Dr. Bob's real monument is visible throughout the length and breadth of AA."
Yeah, nice. Yeah, and that says it all, doesn't it? Exactly. Both in terms of the connection to the corporation, but also in terms of his personal spirituality of humility. Exactly.
Where is Bill buried?
I'm not sure where Bill is buried, but probably close to his home, but I don't know.
But also anonymous?
I think it's as simple as that, yeah. But I don't know that either. All right, so question number 5 on the... Question number four on the 11th tradition. How much do you promote yourself? AA at work, family, and friends. Anybody have a reflection on that that they would care to share, either by reading it or summarizing it? Okay. There we go.
Kim Al-Anon.
Hi, Kim.
Hi. So I don't, you know, I'm a little more clearer on Tradition 11, but I'm thinking this answer might be something in Tradition 12. But here it goes.
Yeah.
So when I first came into Al-Anon and I was on the drug of feeling really good after about 6 months of being in Al-Anon, I thought everyone should have Al-Anon. So I went out and told everyone I was in Al-Anon and promoted myself and thought, this is good for me, this will be good for you, because I like rescuing everyone.
Such a helper.
I am. Thank you. But now going through the steps and the traditions now, and really what I'm have a lot of clarity in this tradition just tonight and hearing it, is the personal responsibility of anonymity for the unity of the group. That's how I'm hearing it tonight, yeah, for myself. And so, interestingly enough, you know, I've been in Al-Anon for a while. So that was like the first year of Al-Anon where I would promote everyone go to Al-Anon. And now I've had relationships and connections with friends and family where they'll come and they'll talk about challenges in their lives, and I'll share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'll say, well, you know, I've had that challenge in life and I've tried to look at it through this lens or this perspective. Nothing about Al-Anon whatsoever. Yeah. And I was just with a coworker who I work with in a professional organization, and she was going through a tough time, and so I just shared my experience, strength, and hope. And at the end of our dinner, she goes, wow, that sounds a lot like Al-Anon. And I was like, and I paused, and I was like, it is Al-Anon, you know? Yeah. So anyways, yeah, full circle.
Well, and the point there is she's protecting some of the anonymity where it's on a need to know basis, but I'm sure that if you felt it would be helpful, you would disclose where you got the information. If somebody says, well, that's all really wonderful wisdom stuff, where did you learn all of that?
Yes.
Then you would, in fact, share, well, I'm a member of a 12-step program called Al-Anon.
Yes, and I have had those experiences, too, yeah, like in the last couple of years. But it really is about, I feel like it is that responsibility of what is my motive, what is my intention. Prior to this working through the steps, my motive and intention was, I want you to have what I have because I want to feel better and I want to know it's the right thing.
Yes, and yeah, I want to feel safe in your presence.
That's right.
And if you have my principles, you'll be safe.
Right. And yes, I'll be controlling and I'll be happy because you're agreeing with me.
Yes, yes, right, yes. We, yes.
Isn't that lovely?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Kim for queen.
Sarah, food addict.
Hi, Sarah.
I sometimes wonder about saying how many years we've been in program, mm-hmm, whether that's a kind of self-promotion. And I'm just making a kind of rule for myself now that when I say that henceforth in my meetings, that I'll remind myself that it's with gratitude that I'm saying it rather than
bragging.
Yeah. And because I can easily start buying my own PR about that and start acting self-important, that I don't need to do the kind of things that newcomers,
yeah,
have to do. And, you know, cut myself slack about making outreach calls. And right, so,
yeah. Well, we'll talk, and Kim was right, it's very difficult, and Sarah, to distinguish sometimes between anonymity of Tradition 11 and Tradition 12, and it doesn't make any difference. We're having a discussion about it, and we'll continue it next week. And I think that there's a whole relevancy to talking about years of service. How about the question, should I even raise my hand in a meeting?
Yes.
Absolutely. Is that self-promotion? Save that one for next week, right?
Thanks, Nicole Al-Anon.
I appreciate what Kim said, because that's my story. Mine with my family was a little bit different, though. Early when I came in, and I was like, I'm an Al-Anon, I'm doing great. And then I hit my fourth step, and I quit talking to my mom, and my relationship with my family pretty well sucked. It was far from being an attraction. Yeah. My mom really loathed it, because we went from having this enmeshed relationship to me just not really talking to her at all. Yeah. Fortunately, through the grace of the program and the wisdom of others, step 8 and 9, that's rekindled, and the experience is now different, and my family is now going to program, but not through my promoting it.
Yeah, yeah.
They went because they saw the changes.
Yeah.
So that, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I had the experience, and I may have shared it in the step workshop, where we were about 6 months into the step workshop, and a woman had been in the workshop, and she wasn't much participant, so I didn't really know who she was. And she had 15 years of sobriety, and she was there doing the work of the workshop. And I got a call after about the workshop going about 6 months, from her husband. He said, my wife's been coming to a meeting on Monday night, and she never told me where she was going or what it was about, but recently I asked her about it, and she said it's a workshop and that you facilitate it. I want to talk to you about that workshop and her participation. I thought, oh, shit. I said, okay, and we got some, you know, made a date for some coffee, and he sits down, he says, I'm 15 years sober, and I've been sitting back watching her change, and I didn't know what the hell she was doing, and I finally asked her. He said, tell me about what you're doing up there. And we had an hour's conversation, and he signed up to do the steps. But she had never said it to him, that she was going to a workshop, that she was working steps, etc. Like, never shared any of that, all right? But her change, her visible behavioral change, was the message. And you heard St. Francis allegedly say, wherever you are, preach the good news. If you have to, use words. See, she wasn't using words. It was manifesting through her behavior, through her relationship with him, that he got something was going on, and he wanted to know about it.
Hi, Greg. And maybe I'm going into a little bit of the 12th tradition here, but I thought, how do I promote? And I remember I recently just got elected as the chairman of the board for an Alano club, and somebody pointed at me at a meeting one time and said, yeah, he's a board member, and I got really worried about like puffing myself up too much, and I said, you know, I also clean the bathrooms here, you know. And then somebody else pointed out to me, hey, you know what? You're supposed to do that stuff, and not seek any recognition about being of service, you know. And I was like, I can't even brag about cleaning the bathrooms anymore. This sucks.
Yeah. You know? Well, they obviously took it out of context. I thought it was a great retort. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great retort, a balancing thing. All right. And he just saw it in a different light. And, you know, it's okay. Let him deal with his own fourth step.
Just to note that I looked it up, and Bill is very East Dorset, Vermont.
That's where he was raised. East Dorset, Vermont. Okay.
It just says Bill Wilson in 2 years on his gravestone.
Oh. I'm sorry. It says Bill Wilson what? There you go. See? There you go.
Yeah, nice. There's two of them. One of them, like, so there's a small headstone that has the year he was born and the year he died. Then there's, like, one at the foot that just says that he was in World War I.
Oh.
That he was what?
World
War I veteran. Yeah, there you go. Very nice. You know, part of my reflection on how I use this tradition in my family is rather than talk about my experiences and talk about my process and talk about my solutions, I've made it a point to ask questions about their life, their problems, their issues. Ask, you know, do they need any help with anything? Rather than ever talk, I'll respond to questions asked of me, but even my answers now are really short unless they continue to prod me for more information, so that I'm not, in fact, doing workshops or monologues at home, right?
I kind of think you answer the question already, but you know how you were talking about the husband noticing the changes in the wife?
Yeah.
Well, he knew her before, you know, she changed. What about people that come into your life after you've changed? Like, how do you carry the message in that way? Because your behavior hasn't, like, you're just the person you are because of the changes, and they didn't know how you were before.
Sure.
So that's my question.
Yeah, well, okay. My sense is that if somebody is authentically transformed, and continuously leaning gently into recovery and spiritual growth, that is so anti-cultural that people will get that, and they'll be asking questions about that, or not. And it's not about whether or not they're recognizing how wonderful you are. Yeah. All right, number five. How are you an attraction within the groups of AA at work and your family and friends? How are you, and that goes right along with what Don's question was. I mean, are you a person, because I've said in the step workshop, we're contagious. Who we are is what we communicate. It's very confrontational. Sorry about that. But think about it. Who you are is what you communicate, not your words, and sometimes not even your behavior, just who you are as a being, as a presence. And if it's a negative, you know, creation, then you need to take a look at that in yourself. So, anybody, please, John.
I just think the question.
Yes.
And I'm not asking them for me.
No.
And people love to talk about themselves.
Yes.
So that's, in most gatherings, family gatherings and stuff like that, if you're always on the, what's up, where's it going, all that, you're attractive to them because you care about them more than you care about yourself.
Well, and you said something that's really, in addition to what you said, is really insightful. I just got it. When you're asking questions, I'm not asking them because I want to know a lot of times. I'm asking them because I want them to ask themselves those questions and to reflect on it. And it may have an impact in that conversation, or it may have an impact a week later as they're driving their car and somehow that conversation comes back because the question has stayed in them like a bullet in a bucket buzzing around, and all of a sudden they wake up to the question. They really hear the question. Yeah, which is what I attempt to do in the workshops.
One way I try to be an attraction in AA, I go to a small meeting where pretty much everybody gets to share. The format of the meeting says the leader picks a topic to share on, and I share on that topic. Most of the others don't.
Right. So you model the behavior of the format. That's exactly right. You don't have to preach it. You have to do it. Yeah. All right. Consider the balance between promotion and attraction. The principles of step 6 and 7 relate and function to the 11th tradition.
Katie, Alcoholic Al-Anon again. I love the 6 and 7 steps. I've done. I really enjoy them, working with them. And since I'm a know-it-all, which, you know, part of me wants attraction because I'm insecure, so that kind of back and forth balance, I've done a lot of meditation and work and prayer on. And what I think, how they relate, is that asking for my motivation. And Al-Anon helped me. Like, what if I'm going to say something? You know, like, I know exactly what you should do, Herb. What's my motivation? Is it for me to help you, which usually doesn't need my advice, or is it to get attention from you? And 6 and 7 for me is all about balance. Where did this character defect work? Where did it go wrong? What's the opposite of it? Because it's all about how I can maintain, because I'm going to go out of balance every 5 seconds. And it reminds me of those little carpenter level bubbles, you know? And it also reminds me that it all depends on the fulcrum, and the fulcrum is my spiritual condition.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So the whole idea of 6 and 7 and attraction and promotion helped me go, out of balance.
That's a wonderful mental image for the 10th step also. That, what did you get? Architects? What? Plumbers. It's a plumber's bubble thing. Yeah, that's great.
Rob, compulsive overeater.
So when I was reflecting on this question, as always, I'm amazed at the direction it goes and what comes up. But I found myself thinking about the area of romance, about dating. You know, if I am a strong self-promoter, or coming on strong, as it were, certainly there are people who that's effective with, who are impressed by that type of, you know, braggadocio. But in terms of a quality person that I would like to attract, that type of approach is more likely to be seen as obnoxious or desperate or arrogant or needy. And, you know, so it seemed to me that willingness, step 6, to have faith and trust in God to provide what I need, and the humility, step 7, to simply be the best person that God will allow me to be and allow others to be attracted to, is the best way to proceed. However, I cannot attract if I don't create and act on opportunities to carry the message of who I am or have been allowed to become, with my higher power's guidance and how I live my life. So there's an equivalent of the 12th step there. I mean, just as the fellowship facilitates opportunities to carry the message, with, you know, if I'm sitting on my couch at home, I'm not going to be able to carry the message to compulsive overeaters who still suffer. I'm also not going to be able to be an object of attraction to other type of people I might want to attract.
Yeah.
So that's what I came up with.
Yeah. And of course, there's a balance there. We don't have to be out proselytizing all the time either. We get a chance to sit on our couch and relax a little bit.
Just an alcoholic. You know, I've had a little experience with promotion. You know, the courts promoted me to AA. They suggested AA meetings, you know? And they also led me to drunk driving school. And the guy in the school was sober. And he was so clear, and his eyes were so clear, and he was so giving and so happy. He was just an attraction for AA, you know.
Nice.
And he shared about being in AA and how he his life came together by going to meetings and by participating.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that guy, ever.
Wow. See, now, there's a ministry that I hadn't even thought of, is a drunk driving school educator or class facilitator. If you're in recovery, what a perfect audience to be talking to, as long as you're not evangelical about it, but just trying to, of course, I heard it. It's wonderful. Yeah. It was wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Point of information, that little, the level is actually called a spirit level.
A spirit level.
Spirit level. It's the third definition in the OED, and it's a device consisting of a sealed glass tube partially filled with alcohol or other liquid containing an air bubble whose position reveals whether a surface is perfectly level or plumb.
A spirit level?
It's a spirit level, also a bubble level.
Spirit level.
A spirit level is a...
Very cool.
They're poems written using that word. Yeah.
All right. So you'll be hearing that in next year's workshop. Sure. Don't hold your breath.
Isn't that like the teeter-totter you also mentioned?
The what?
Teeter-totter.
Oh, the teeter-totter. Yeah, balancing. Yeah. All right. So,
Are you prone to praising yourself for the good that happens through your service to others? Do you sometimes feel like taking credit? Very challenging questions, of course. And
Nicole Al-Anon, I really loved this question. As an Al-Anon, it was I outwardly praised myself to others. It was just a very fake mask that I wore on a regular basis to appear less squishy and completely impermeable, no vulnerability at all. And, you know, by the grace of the program and God, I can, you know, and getting to work with others, I get to take them through that same process for myself where, when is it okay to praise myself? And what does that look like today versus then? And so I don't praise myself because I'm a sponsor and helping other women, but I teach, I don't like the word teach, but I encourage them to praise themselves, to soften the constant self-flagellation that we so easily do.
Maybe you're talking about self-affirmation and confirmation and positive thinking.
It is definitely based on awareness. When they get that awareness and they find a solution on their own.
But to themselves.
Yes, exactly. And that was really hard is I would outwardly praise myself, but inwardly tear myself apart. Mm. And now I don't have to outwardly praise myself because I've learned how to do it inwardly.
There you go.
And that's something that I've really been able to that's something I like to share with others because, you know, I don't praise myself for their good work.
Yeah.
I definitely encourage them to praise themselves for their good work.
Yeah. And that's an organic process that develops from the outside to the inside. It's kind of like we behave differently and we create habits that then will allow the behavior to come from the inside rather than from some exterior mandate.
Now, I have pride, but I have that pride in my sponsees when they call me and they say, this is the solution.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is how I got there.
It's not the pride of ego-centeredness. It's the sort of that recognition of the good and the accomplishment.
Is it fair to say it could be somewhat maternal without, it's like, here's, you're flying away from the nest. Woohoo! Yeah. I'm so proud of you.
You know? Yeah, right.
So thanks.
Thank you, Rob.
In the area of work, I felt a sort of a conflict with the principle of this tradition. About the question about do I feel like taking credit, whereas in my, although almost everything is done that we do is sort of team-based, and I'm usually not interested in claiming credit. But there's an area, for example, where scientific publishing is important to sort of maintain one's status and to advance. So there are times people want to sort of fight for a byline and make sure they're included on an article or something. And I'm uncomfortable to step up and say, well, I'm going to be an author on this, right, or a co-author. And I guess by the spirit of the tradition, it shouldn't matter. I guess I shouldn't be asking for that or something.
Well, I think that would be false humility where you're not standing for the truth. The truth is if you contributed, then you're entitled to the recognition, and that's important to you in terms of your professional development, your recognition, and probably your compensation. So I would say that's taking care of yourself. That's not self-promoting. That's, in fact, self-care. That's the way I would phrase that. I mean, and somebody said it earlier, maybe two or three people actually, it's about what's the motive and what's the intention.
Yeah.
Underneath. What's the motive? What's the intention? It's not about getting some grandiose recognition that you didn't deserve or even that you did deserve. It's about taking care of yourself in an appropriate way.
Yeah.
And that would be a good subject for a conversation with a sponsor if you have any ambivalence about it.
Yeah,
thanks, Rob.
John, alcoholic. What I've gotten in AA, I did not have before I got here.
Yeah.
What I have now, I've been purely given by others.
So I can't really take credit for the thing I pass on to others.
Yeah. Well, and that very principle is the reason that after I wrote and published my first book, that I gave that book ownership to the House of Hope, a recovery home for women in San Pedro. They own it legally. They get the royalties from it because it was freely given to me over a 10-year period. Now, I took the time and wrote it out, and I took the money and I made an investment in it. But my God, what did I get from all of this? Absolutely. All right. So, right. All right. So, I'd like to just go back to the book here a little bit. Now, this is now Pass It On, and on page 307, anonymity was originally practiced for reasons that had to do with the experimental nature of the society and with the prevailing stigma on alcoholism. Bill concluded that the deeper purpose of anonymity was, quote, actually to keep those fool egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. That's a nice recap for Tradition 11, as well as this particular piece from AA Comes of Age. There's lots of material in these books about anonymity, I mean, like 15, 20-page essays on it, or the history of it, and you can find them by looking in the index if, in fact, you're interested in more of the background and history and the writing on it. On page 292 in this appendix, this is why we see anonymity at the general public level as our chief protection against ourselves, the guardian of all our traditions, and the greatest symbol of self-sacrifice that we know. Of course, no AA need be anonymous to family, friends, or neighbors. Disclosure there is usually right and good. Nor is there any special danger when we speak at group or semi-public AA meetings, provided press reports reveal first names only. We now realize that 100% personal anonymity before the public is just as vital to the life of AA as 100% sobriety is to the life of each and every member. It was worth repeating for us. So we'll do Tradition 12 next week and continue this, I think, wonderfully rich discussion. I do really recommend that you read these two paragraphs, well, you know, the one, the current one, and this pamphlet on the anonymity. There's about 15 or 20 pages in here. They're very worthwhile. A lot of it has to do with Tradition 12 about personal anonymity, the implications of that, and then we'll discuss perhaps a couple different approaches to anonymity, both endorsed by AA, and the final conclusion is you make up your mind as to how anonymous you want to be. All right? And so you can, well, we'll talk about that next time. Our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. This we owe to our fellowship's future. To place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there, and for that we are responsible. After a moment, please join me in the prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. See you next week.